Hola, ¿cómo andan? Hi, how's things going? As they'd say here in Havana. This is another in the occasional series, I suppose, of booze about Cuba food, and more particularly sourcing it and the lengths to which people, Cubans and myself when I'm here, go to in order to source food. Probably the best way to do this is to kind of describe what I do on a daily basis or during my week, and by extension imply that Cubans do the same, because there's no difference between where I go to shop and where Cubans go to shop. So I go to the markets on pretty much a daily basis. I go early because two reasons really. The good stuff is gone if you go late. And it's too hot if you go any later. So I head out usually before 8 a.m. I'm very lucky. I live in a place called Vedado, which is quite a nice area, just on the outskirts. It's like a suburb of Havana City. And where I'm located has quite good markets. It would have been quite a middle class area. Back pre-revolution days, there's quite a lot of large, imposing mansion houses and the newer apartment blocks, maybe from the 30s and 40s. A lot of Art Deco architecture. It's a very interesting place to live, and it's quite leafy as well, so it's quite nice. So the first market is outside my door, all of about 10 paces, right on the corner. It's a handy little market because you can run out, grab a few quick things. The difference, though, is that you don't know what's going to be there from one day to the next. So I tend to walk past it when I'm going to or from the house. So I have a quick glance and see what's available so that I know then if I'm stuck for, let's say, onions and they happen to have it that day, I know I can run out and get it. I tend to leave that market, and you'll see why. For the last one of my trip almost. So I head off and with my own shopping bags, because you got to bring your own ones in Cuba. And I go to 21 y Jota, and that's the local cheapest market to my house. That's 21 and J, for those of you who don't speak Spanish. There you'll find a small selection of fruits and vegetables, beans also on pretty regularly. The problem with that market is that it doesn't have a whole lot of choice. It'll probably have about 10 products, no more. Sometimes, some days, it may only have one. I mean, it literally will have only boniato. It'll only have sweet potato. So I tend to kind of, again, do a quick recce, quick glance around there, see what's available. The prices there are very good. It's completely state operated and run. A word about markets, most of them, the vast majority in Cuba, when it comes to markets anyway, are Cuban state owned. There are one or two that aren't. So, I'll take a look at what's there, make a mental note of it, and then head on to the next market, which is the S17 ICA. The S17 ICA, 17 and K, is quite a big market, and it's got quite good choice and very keen prices. Now, when I say prices, I'll do my entire shopping, fruits and vegetables for the day for about 2 CUC, or the equivalent of 2 CUC, maybe 50 pesos, moneda nacional, national money, which for a Cuban is not, it's not extraordinarily expensive, but it's not cheap when you consider that their wages in equivalent in the CUC, which is the Cuban convertible peso, because there's a dual currency in Cuba. The equivalent of their wages would be about 20 to 25, maybe 30 CUC, depending on their job and responsibilities. So they might spend their day's wages just on vegetables alone, in theory, which is why most Cubans can't survive on just one job. They've got to be doing a few other things because their food bill alone would only be paid by their wages, and anything else needs to be paid for by some other means. But that's an entirely different story for another day. So we're down at Yesi Siete Ka. There's quite a lot of choice, generally speaking. You'll always, in season, of course, because everything is seasonal in Cuba, but when it's in season, you'll pretty much always find yuca, which is cassava, which I adore. I call it wet potato. It's like a sweet wet potato. It's a root vegetable. You'll find boniato, sweet potato, tomatoes, onions. There's a stall that sells dried herbs, where I get my dried spices. There's another guy who does fresh herbs, but the herbs, they tend to only have the very basics, nothing kind of different or unusual. You'll get a bit of parsley, you'll get culantro, which is a form of, or in the same family as coriander, as regular cilantro. You'll get bay leaf, and that's probably about it, to be honest. You won't find thyme, you won't find basil, nothing kind of, let's say, out of the ordinary in terms of Cuban culinary tradition. That market also has a couple of stalls where you can eat little fried snacks. They call them frituras. I adore them. It's dangerous because once you have one, you need about 10 of them. So I try and do my shopping and then reward myself with a little fritura. One of the ones I like are the maize ones, and it's ground corn or maize meal with a touch of salt and a little bit of liquid to bind it together, and then fried in tiny little bite-sized pieces. And you get three in a portion, and it costs 5 pesos moneda nacional, which is really, really cheap. You can also buy... you can get your, rather, libreta allowance of meat. They very often have, a couple of times a week, they have the meat allowance on the libreta, which is the ration book. They also do coco rallado. Oh, yum. I adore coconut for a few reasons, actually. Firstly, I love to cook with coconut milk. The restaurant that I used to have was an Asian fusion restaurant, so we used quite a lot of coconut milk, and I would have grown up with a lot of coconut milk in my diet at home. So in order for me to make coconut milk, and I do have to make it, I can't just go out and buy a tin, I need to buy freshly grated coconut and make coconut milk myself. So 17 and K is where I go to get my grated coconut. It also makes a wonderful Cuban dessert called dulce de coco, which literally translated is sweet coconut. And it's coconut and sugar, and that's it. And I never would have thought that coconut and sugar would have tasted so good, but it's cooked low and slow in a hard or thick bottomed saucepan for a long time, and it caramelizes and turns into this, it's like what is it like? It's very hard to describe. It's, for me, I like it because it's got texture, and I am a big fan of texture. So it's not creamy or smooth, but it's got texture. And what I do is I drop it into, or form it into little balls once it's cool enough to handle. And then I have like little, again, bite-sized chunks. And the problem, of course, is that once you have one, you want them all. But that's fine. You know, I'm burning calories in Cuba because I'm walking everywhere. So I treat myself with a little dulce de coco. I don't make it every day. I maybe once or twice a month if I have guests or something coming over. So I will generally get the bulk of my shopping at 17 and K. And then I'll pick up any other bits that I saw at 21 and J at 21 Ijota, and I'll pick up the heavy stuff, you know, like the sweet potatoes, like potatoes if they're in season. But the potato season in Cuba is like 5 minutes long. So you just, potatoes, particularly I'm Irish, so every now and again I like to have a potato. I don't eat a lot of potatoes when I'm in Ireland, but you know, when you're away from home, you want a taste of home. Honestly, I've given up on it because the potatoes here are watery, my grandmother would say. And they're just not like a potato. So I just stick to boniato, which is sweet potato. Incidentally, boniato is what they feed their cats. Well, not their cats. The cats just scavenge. But boniato is what they feed dogs in Cuba because it's cheap. So people buy sacks of low grade, low quality boniato, boil it up and feed it to their animals because pet food is almost non-existent. You can't find it at all. Interesting, because when I serve boniato at the table, and I do quite regularly, people kind of, my Cuban friends look at me and go, is she really poor? This is just interesting little tidbit. When I come back from my shopping trip, I'll stop on the corner and pick up any fruits. They tend to be very good for fruits on my corner market. They are a little bit more expensive, but the quality is pretty good. And then I go twice a week, sometimes three times a week, depending on what I'm missing or what I need. I go to the Mercado on 19 and B, 19 y B. Now, this is a very different market because that market is not government controlled. It's a free market. And you'll immediately notice the difference. First, it's always crazy busy, but then pretty much every market is in Cuba. It also has an amazing choice in comparison to the other markets. So where, let's say in potato season, you wouldn't be able to find a potato for love nor money in any of the other markets, you will always be able to find a potato in 19 IB. If I need jengibre, ginger, which I use a lot for cooking, I go to 19 IB because that's the only place that I know that I can find ginger in Havana. If you want fruits from the Oriente, from the eastern part of Cuba, that do not make it in the government supply chain all the way to Havana, it's just too difficult to transport them, or they get damaged, or for whatever other reason, you will be able to find them at 19 and B. It's also in the morning, if you go, where most of the diplomats and foreign residents who have a little bit of means, they'll go to shop there because the choice, the quality is more akin to maybe what you might find back home. Now, that's not to say that it's like walking into your local Sainsbury's. It's not. It's certainly, you know, it's more like a farmer's market for a start. But vegetables come with the dirt included in Cuba. There's no pre-washing, fancy polishing of fruits and vegetables. These, you know, they're picked out of the ground. They're put in a wooden box onto the back of the truck and then arrive, and that's it. There's no other processes or grading or anything like that that it goes through. So you need to pick through your vegetables and fruits and make sure and handle them. You need to do a lot of vegetable feeling, not peeling, feeling. And you need to do that because you need to check for rotten pieces, for damaged parts. You need to check for ripeness or overripeness. So those skills, I suppose, of assessing your vegetables, of vegetable feeling, is something actually that I wasn't great at before I started going to Cuba. Even though I would have bought at farmers markets back in Ireland, and I helped set up a local farmers market here from where I'm from in Crosshaven in County Cork. In Ireland, certainly, it's not the done thing to go around and feel the farmer's vegetables. And certainly in the supermarket, you would see parents telling children off, no, 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 don't touch the display or don't touch the vegetables. But when you think about it logically, you're about to buy a vegetable or a fruit and you want to know if it's fresh and if it's ready to eat. You need to pick it up, you need to smell it, and you need to feel it. Now, you don't need to squeeze the living daylights out of it and bruise the fruit and damage it, but you do need to have a little bit of a feel. So in Cuba now, I have no issues doing that. And I find myself when I'm back in Europe doing similar and getting dirty looks from store owners. So, yeah, I go to 19&B and buy all of the, I suppose, extras and the choicest of produce. They also have at 19&B a stall. These are all privately owned stalls. They pay a rent to the government to be there, but the profits are their own. And the stall does vegetables and fruits, but it does like pre-prepared packets for the busy Cuban housewife, which I think is an indication of the way things are going for a few reasons. Firstly, if you have a job in Cuba, everybody has a job in Cuba pretty much. But if you have a job that necessitates long working hours and you're a woman, well, then you've got a difficulty because generally speaking, the women are responsible for running the household and raising the children. Oh, and doing their job on top of everything else. So they are time poor, just like, you know, I would have been in Ireland. And so you need something that's a little bit more convenient. And you'll see at this stall pre-packed packets of, let's say, soup mix, where they have the vegetables, the hard vegetables have been washed and peeled and chopped into chunks. You'll have a second packet which has onion, ahi, which is like a small pepper. It looks like a chili, but it's not spicy. And that's important for making sofrito, which is a mixture of onion, garlic, and this pepper, which is added to almost every dish in Cuba. So you'll have another packet with that. And then you'll have a third packet with the herbs that go in the soup. And all of that's ready to go. Of course, you pay a premium for it. But it means it takes all the hassle out of making a soup for dinner that night. So you can cut down on your preparation time. They also do little packets of pre-prepared cassava, of yuca, which I have to admit is very handy because yuca is time consuming. It's a large root vegetable. It's very hard. It's covered in earth when you get it because it grows in the ground. You got to spend quite a lot of time washing it. And then you have to peel the skin, which is laborious, and then cut it into chunks. And then my tip that I was shown by Cubans is to cut it into large chunks and freeze it immediately. And the freezing does a couple of things. One, it preserves it. And two, it softens down the fiber so that when you go to cook it, it cooks faster. So again, all of these little convenience tips and tricks are things that are creeping into the culture over here because people, you know, they need to work very hard. And like I was saying earlier on, they need to work not only one job, they probably need to work two or three jobs. So for women, they need to find ways of cooking good, nutritious food for their families, but in less time. So there's my trips to the markets. It's pretty indicative of what a Cuban would do. And it's also interesting to say that it's indicative of what a Cuban restaurateur would do. Because I'm quite conscious of, you know, how a restaurateur would source ingredients, having done it myself for many years. And in Cuba, unlike other countries, pretty much any other country, I guess, as a restaurant business, you have no access to wholesale. So if I was in Ireland, I would go to my local Musgraves, which is a cash and carry here in Cork, or I would go to Mr. Bell, who's my wholesale guy for spices, and I would get large quantities at a discount because I'm buying wholesale and source ingredients for my restaurant, same with vegetables, etc., and meats. But in Cuba, the supply chain, all those logistics, all of those supports have disappeared. They used to exist way back, but now they've disappeared. And so restaurants have to source on the open market just like everybody else. And that makes life difficult. If you're a mom and pop small Paladar, which is the name we use for restaurants, privately owned small restaurants in Cuba. If you're a Paladar and a small one, you need to go out to the markets and source all those ingredients just like everybody else. And your margin is reduced because you're buying at the regular price. So it's difficult for restaurant owners. Now, the thing that they do, particularly the bigger operations, is they go straight to source. And it's interesting because there's a parallel for me with a restaurant that I'm familiar with in Cork in Ireland, which is Cafe Paradiso, which is the best restaurant in Cork and arguably one of the best in Ireland. And it's a vegetarian restaurant, very, very well known vegetarian restaurant internationally. And Dennis, who owns that restaurant, he works directly with a farm to produce the vegetables that he needs for his restaurant. When you're cooking vegetarian food, you need absolute maximum flavor. And he works very, very closely with the growers of those vegetables, and they choose together which ones to plant. And that means that he has a guaranteed supply chain and extremely high quality. And that's exactly what a lot of Paladars are doing in Cuba. They have gone out into the countryside, honestly, probably their cousins or their family who have land or fincas or who have connections out in the provinces, places like Mayabeque or Artemisa province or Pinar del Rio, which are provinces that border Havana and are very fertile and rich. And they source the ingredients directly from the farm that they need. But they need to set up their own supply chain because things like that just don't exist right now in Cuba. So you'll see restaurateurs and their fixers early in the morning in these markets, particularly in places like 19 and B, where you can get a choice of ingredients. And a lot of restaurants, excuse me, will have people whose only job it is to source ingredients, because you need to go to multiple markets in order to find all the ingredients that you would need in order to cook dishes for your restaurant, which is why you'll find many restaurants don't have a fixed menu. So as a tourist, you'll go in and you'll go, well, where's the menu? And they'll just tell you what is available that day. And it's because it's every day is different and every day is down to what they can source. Now, a word here about black market. The black market exists in Cuba. Officially, it doesn't. But unofficially, nobody, absolutely nobody could survive in this country without buying food on the black market. I do it. My neighbours do it. Every Cuban I know does it. And it's a real skill in order to be able to build those and cultivate those contacts in order to be able to buy food on the black market. Me personally, for example, I buy eggs on the black market because you just can't get them in the store. Eggs are very, very difficult to find. So I have a go-to egg lady that I put in my order, and it's good quality. They cost more. They cost 2 pesos, moneda nacional, per egg. But the quality is there and there's pretty much a guaranteed supply. What else do I buy on the black market? I buy some rice on the black market sometimes, because the rice that you buy in the markets is very, very poor quality. And sometimes on the black market, you can get better quality rice. I've heard rumor that it's imported from Brazil. I don't know how true that is, but I'm guessing a few container loads go missing every now and again, and that's how they sell it on the black market. One thing I don't do, though, is buy milk on the black market. I don't drink milk anyway, but I do use it in cooking and preparing desserts, etc. And maybe in soups as a kind of a way to cream, to make them more creamy. But milk, particularly the fresh milk in the little plastic pouch packets that they have here, is only sold on the libreta. It's only on the ration book, and it's for children under 6 and older people and maybe someone who's ill who has a specific ration for milk. And those people get their ration. And I know that if I bought milk on the black market, someone did not get their ration, or someone's ration was sold. And, you know, I can't reconcile myself with that at all. So I just don't do it. So I buy powdered milk. There's a place, Carlos Tresera, a big shopping center. And behind the shopping center in the car park, they sell powdered milk early on a Saturday morning. So I go there and I get a couple of kilos of powdered milk and I store it for the month. So I hope it's give this little boo has given you an insight into my tour of daily markets in Cuba, and gives you an insight into the complications of sourcing food in Cuba. It's a complicated and time-consuming business. Hasta luego. Until the next time.